Let's set the record straight. Jesus was not a Palestinian. Oh, and there's some big news about a big pushback against the Supreme Court decision from June.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to The Line of Fire today. It's just amazing from Friday to Monday how many things happen, how the world feels like it's changed a little bit more. Even some recent news out of Syria. We have been arming the Syrian rebels. They have anti-tank missiles. Russia arming the Assad side. So we are almost in a proxy war with Russia in Syria. Just every day gets more and more bizarre. The good news is Jesus is Lord. The good news is when all the kingdoms of man are gone, God's word will still stand secure. The good news is, although the whole world will be shaken, the righteous will never be shaken. This is Michael Brown. Welcome to The Line of Fire today. A whole lot to talk about. If you want to talk to me about almost anything, I'll open the phone lines and take different calls on different subjects over the course of the day. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884 is the number to call. Hey, listen, if you differ with me on something, rather than sending a nasty email, rather than posting a profane tweet, rather than some ugly comment on Facebook, why not call the show? This gives us the benefit of being able to talk. Well, I don't want to talk to you. All right, well, perhaps you're not listening with an open heart and an open mind. Have you ever gotten into an argument? I have, where you are so set on proving your point that you don't even listen to what the other person's saying except to argue against it. You don't actually say to yourself, let me hear what they're saying. Maybe they have a point. If you call me and raise your point, I'll listen to you. And then I just request you listen to me when I respond. So that's one reason we have live talk radio. All right, 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call. A bunch of things to talk about. Dr. Jeremiah Wright, President Obama's former pastor, at a rally with Louis Farrakhan, saying that Jesus was a Palestinian, among a number of completely outrageous comments. We'll get to those later. Major pushback. I've been saying that 2015 is a year of pushback. It's not time to throw in the towel. It's the time to push back. The negative turn in the culture wars is a wake-up call for the church, not a time to capitulate, a time to wake up. So a number of top legal scholars from around America and even other nations, other universities, have signed a document together calling on all presidential candidates not to recognize the Supreme Court's overreach in June when it sought to redefine marriage, calling on current office holders not to recognize it. It's a significant statement. We'll get to that as well. But first, a sports comment. I enjoyed watching some sports over the weekend. Watched a game last night with son-in-law and grandson, just chilling, having some fun, and doing a little work in the background, but more just relaxing. And if you are a Giants fan, well, they won kind of last-second amazing game, New York Giants fan. But if you were a San Francisco 49ers fan, that was bad news. Giants fan, good news. And the same with sports across the world. Can I just say something? I admire the athleticism. I admire the commitment. I admire the dedication. I admire the hard work. And there's some fine believers on these different teams. But it doesn't really matter that much. It's just a game. And if your emotions are more caught up in a sports game than the gospel, something's not right. Wouldn't you agree? We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I do not believe that it is the responsibility of the Jewish people to be the only true Christians in the world and to constantly be giving our other cheek.
Those were the words of Caroline Glick. She's been a senior editor with the Jerusalem Post. She has been on Prime Minister Netanyahu's administration. She's speaking passionately in light of ongoing terror attacks coming against the Jewish people in Israel. This was a clip about 10 days ago. She was speaking at, where was this? She was speaking at an event. There were others, Israelis and others from different perspectives. It was the AJC Global Forum 2015. So there are some very liberal Israeli professors and activists who constantly speak against Israel, who say that Israel's getting what it deserves, who are so pro-Palestinian that they're tremendously hostile to their own Jewish people. And she's rightly addressing these issues. Yeah, there are always two sides to a story, but there's also often right and wrong to a story. And I say clearly there is a right and there is a wrong. So let's focus in on Israel for a moment. 866-34-TRUTH. And I want to give you an opportunity. I know that a whole lot of you listen who don't agree with me. Obviously, the vast majority of listeners agree and find hope and encouragement and strength listening to the broadcast or edified or informed. Others listen with deep disagreement. And I know it because I hear from some of you from time to time, some in civil ways, some in extremely uncivil ways. But if you're listening to me right now, as we focus on Israel for a little while, before we get to the Jeremiah Wright comments, which I'll do later in the show, and then if all goes well, we'll put out a video with me addressing those Jeremiah Wright comments that you'll be able to watch on YouTube within a day or so. But if you're listening to me and you're a Muslim, if you're listening to me and you're a Palestinian, if you're listening to me and you are neither Muslim nor Palestinian, but believe that Israel is the bad guy in the Middle East, that the reason for Palestinian terror is oppressive Israeli policies, the phone lines are open for you to express your viewpoint. I would like to interact with you, though, because it is my show. So here's an open challenge. I hear from you on a regular basis in many, many other settings. Some of you in a civil way, some in the most uncivil way, which gets you instantly blocked. So I don't know what the purpose of that is. But let me just tell you, if you post ugly things, hateful things, calls for violence, profanity, and wherever else, you're going to be instantly blocked, be it on Twitter or Facebook or wherever it comes in. That does not make you a martyr. That does not make you some special person because we blocked you. It just means that you did not fit in with our civil guidelines. I blocked someone the other day. I happened to notice a comment from an alleged Christian. Tremendously hateful comment towards another group. I blocked them. Doesn't matter which side you're coming from. It's the tone and content. But feel free to differ with me here, and others across America get to hear your dissent. So Caroline Glick passionately is pointing out the double standard that it's used. Caroline Glick is demonstrating that the issues are not simply a matter of, well, all these years of oppression of Palestinians and all they can do is fight back, because the saying remains true that if the Palestinians were to put down their weapons, there would be no more war. If the Israelis were to put down their weapons, there would be no more Israel. On a regular basis, in the mosques, on state TV in Gaza, and under the Palestinian Authority in the so-called West Bank, so-called occupied territories, on state-run TV, there are incitements to hatred against the Jewish people. There are incitements in the textbooks against the Jewish people. There are praises for those who kill Jews. So go check it out for yourself. Go to palwatch.org, PALWATCH.org, palwatch.org. Go there. This is Palestinian Media Watch. And look at the reports from today. You have incidents where Palestinians stabbed Israelis, men, women, or children, and then were shot and killed, either by civilians who were armed or by police. In one case, the person attacked was able to shoot back. But listen to the responses, okay? And you'll see the actual clips. You can watch them. You can listen to them. They're translated from Arabic. Go to palwatch.org and listen. The Palestinians, in my view, are victims. Yes, the murderer is a murderer, the terrorist is a terrorist, but the people as a whole are victims of corrupt leadership. The Palestinians are victims of corrupt leadership and victims of incitement. If the leaders led differently, it would be a completely different situation. So, Palestinian parents celebrate terrorist children's martyrdom death. Father of a stabber. It is not a loss when you are talking about Palestine. My son is an offering to the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Again, because of Palestinian incitement and attacks on Jews or threatened attacks on Jews, Israeli soldiers had to come on to the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the territory there, which is sacred and non-Muslims shouldn't be in there, because weapons were being stockpiled, rocks were being stockpiled. So naturally, they go in to enforce the law, and now Israel is guilty of a terrible breach, and now it's open season against Israelis. The mother of the killer of two, O mother of martyr, let out cries of joy. Father of killer of two, he avenged the women of Al-Aqsa against the impure enemies. He made everyone lift his head up high. May he find favor in the eyes of Allah. Uncle of stabber, this is a wedding. It is a celebration. We consider him a martyr with Allah. You say, but Mike, weren't there some ultra-Orthodox Jews who praised the ultra-Orthodox Jew who some years back attacked someone, stabbed someone at a gay pride event in Jerusalem? And then no sooner is he released from jail that he goes and stabs someone else. Aren't there ultra-Orthodox Jews who praised him? Yes. And they're doing that as despised by the nation as a whole. And they're doing that as rejected by religious leaders across the nation. And is categorically denounced by the government. And the populace as a whole is appalled by it. It's very different. It's very different when you're talking about radical Islam and the killing of Jews, especially Israeli Jews, who are considered to be the evil occupiers. A Fatah official about Fatah youth, potential martyrs. He's calling them potential martyrs for the beloved Palestine. And here you have, again, official posts by Fatah, the Martyrs Brigade. Encouraging children who express a desire to die for Allah and the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Mom, I want to die as a martyr. I want to carry out a martyrdom operation that is a terrorist attack in order to kill some Israeli soldiers. This, friends, is reality on the ground. Here, the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade chanting revolution, honor, victory, and generosity. My blood will be shed for Al-Aqsa. My blood will rebel until our return. And then quote after quote, video clips. Muhammad Halabi attacks someone, stabs him, is shot to death, and they show her singing. Now look, these are human beings. They have to feel some level of pain. They have to miss family members, but the fact is, there is a celebration because their children died as martyrs trying to kill Jews. And is this renounced by the Palestinian Authority? Is it renounced by Hamas? The answer is absolutely not. It is encouraged. It is praised. These people will receive benefits, pensions, and they will be considered heroes. If it's a woman, heroines. So the mother who's letting out cries of joy and singing, her son, Mohanad Halabi, before he was killed, killed two Israelis, Rabbi Nehemiah Lavi and Aharon Bennett, and injured Bennett's wife. Adele and their 2-year-old son in a stabbing attack in the Old City of Jerusalem, October 3rd, 2015. Following the attack, he was shot and killed by Israeli security forces. Prior to his attack, in a post to his private Facebook page, the terror referred to recent terror attacks as part of a third intifada and said that it was a response to Israel's actions, that the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Palestinian people would not succumb to humiliation. And she's rejoicing. Her son kills two Israelis, injures, stabs in the shoulder of the wife, injures the 2-year-old son, dies as he's put down by Israeli police, and she's praising him as a martyr and singing. Friends, these people desperately need the Lord. It's a battle of light and darkness.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire. Just want to focus in a little bit more on Israel before turning our attention to the United States, 866-34-TRUTH. Do you believe that Israel has a right to a homeland? Do you believe that God brought the Jewish people back to the land? Do you believe the church is called to stand with Israel and bless Israel? Doesn't mean sanction everything Israel does, but stand with Israel. Do you believe that Israel is an occupier or an evil occupier for that matter? Do you believe that Israel is a true democratic ally in the Middle East, or we're thorn in our flesh and we make a terrible mistake by standing with Israel? What do you think? 866-34-TRUTH. Listen to Caroline Glick. This is about 10 days ago. A discussion debating these issues about Israel, its treatment of Palestinians, terrorism, etc. Joey, let's grab clip number 3. And it's a powerful statement. I agree very much with what Caroline Glick is saying.
We make concession after concession after concession. Things that harm us, things that endanger the lives of Israeli citizens. Releasing terrorists from prison causes the murder of additional Jews. And we know this. We have statistical data to show it. The recidivism rate of terrorists who we release from prison at the behest of the U.S. government, in accordance with the demands of our supposed negotiating partners, the moderate Palestinian leadership. Jews have been killed. What is a Jewish life worth? Enough is enough. We never get credibility for showing our sincerity for peace. We get killed for showing our sincerity to peace.
Yeah, it is very, very true. So let's just take the most glaring case in point. Gaza, all right? When Gaza, which is on the west coast of Israel and immediately north of Egypt, when Gaza was under the control of Egypt from 1947 to 1948 to 1967, nothing was done to help the Palestinians living there. Nothing was done to improve the conditions. Then when Israel took over in recent decades before turning things back to the Palestinians, there was improvement of the quality of life. There was improvement of the quality of life. And then when Israel said, okay, what, about a decade ago, we will give Gaza completely over to the Palestinians. They can rule over it, they can lead, etc. Now, Israel still has authority in terms of it can blockade if weapons are coming in and things like that. So it's they have, what, 20,000 people, multiple thousands of Jews who've been living there for years, who've developed the land, who built homes and synagogues and things like that. They were literally forcefully carried out because they didn't want to leave. It was traumatic for the nation. But we had to do this, and Ariel Sharon somehow thought, we have to do this. So what do? They pull the Jewish presence out completely. So there's not a Jew living there. They give it completely over to Palestinians. You elect who you want. Who do they elect? Hamas. Hamas is then elected. And what happens? Hamas now just carries out its terror campaign against Israel and uses the funds that come in to build tunnels, to come under Israel to try to attack and kill Israeli men, women, and children, kidnapping operations and things like that, according to confessions that came out when the tunnels were discovered. They use money for weapons and continue to brainwash the people in the harshest terms that it's all Israel's fault. Even Yasser Arafat's widow criticized Hamas's leadership of the people. So Israel pulls out completely. What does it get? Weapons fired. Thousands, multiplied thousands of rockets fired. Well, so you see, they're really not sophisticated rockets. Oh, so if you live in Sderot and have to always be within 15 seconds of a bomb shelter, that means when you're in the shower, that means when you're a kid at elementary school, within 15 seconds of a bomb shelter, there are elementary school children with post-traumatic stress syndrome just because of the constant bombings. That's what Israel got for pulling out. Israel, under pressure from America, will release 1,000 terrorists, many of whom are murderers. What do? They go murder again. When they're released, the Palestinians say, look, learn your lesson. You were a bad boy. Learn your lesson. No, they get celebrated as heroes. You say the conflict goes back a long time. It sure does. And there were simple solutions so that Jews and Arabs could live side by side in the land. And those solutions were rejected categorically and repeatedly by Palestinian leadership, which is why I say again, the problem for the Palestinian people is the corrupt leadership. The problem for the Palestinian people is radical Islam. Israel will gladly work with peace-loving Palestinians. All right, let me play a clip for you. Changing gears. Joey, number one. This is a fascinating statement. I hadn't heard this in some years, but a few years back, I debated Professor Bart Ehrman. He's a highly respected liberal New Testament scholar, Greek New Testament scholar, textual scholar, and even better known as an agnostic who lost his faith and is very critical of a simple faith in the Bible as God's word. We debated a few years back, a packed house at Ohio State University with a live webcast as well. Does the Bible provide an adequate answer to the problem of suffering? I'm bringing this up for a reason here. So let's listen to what an atheist had to say to our team after the debate.
I felt like Bart Ehrman's tone left a lot to be desired. I felt like it was screechy and whiny. It was not an appealing tone. I don't feel like there was a chance at all that he would have brought anyone over, even from a fence-sitting position to his position. So, like, preaching to the choir will get you so far, you know? I felt like, you know, I disagree with Brown's position, but I felt like his presentation was far and away more professional-sounding and really more appealing to a general audience. And if a debate is about changing opinion, I feel like Ehrman totally missed it, and Brown really did a good job, which is sad to say, because I disagree with Brown's position and I agree with Ehrman's position.
All right, fascinating observation from an atheist. This week, when you order my book, Authentic Fire, Response to John MacArthur's Strange Fire, which will build you up in the faith, which will model how to have differences with grace, which will show you what the Bible really says about the gifts and power of the Spirit, which will show you how Pentecostals and Charismatics have rebuked error in their own midst over the years, and which will really help bring you into a deeper encounter with God. We've gotten some amazing testimonies about that. People who've wept all night after seeking God, after reading the book. When you order Authentic Fire, we're sending you free the DVD of my two-hour debate with Professor Bart Ehrman that you just heard about. Go to the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Find out more. Take advantage of this special offer.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, have you heard about Dr. Paul Church? Have you heard about Dr. Paul Church? He's a professor at Harvard University in the medical program there, and has been a respected doctor for many years at a major hospital in the greater Boston area. And he became concerned when the hospital would actively promote gay pride events. And his concern was, well, hang on for a second. We know that homosexual practice, especially men with men, that homosexual practice is not healthy. It's just like cigarette smoking is not healthy and heavy drinking is not healthy, that homosexual practice leads to more sexually transmitted diseases than heterosexual acts, and it leads to other complications, other problems, other health issues. So he became concerned that the hospital was aggressively promoting these things rather than saying, by the way, there are health risks. The hospital could have said, well, first, why is the hospital promoting gay pride events? What business does the hospital have in doing that? That's question number one. Question number two is even if they thought it was a political issue, they wanted to promote equality for all, then shouldn't they also say, but we want to warn against certain behaviors if you're going to be responsible? Come on, who in America today would tolerate a hospital celebrating cigarette smoking or celebrating heavy drinking or celebrating junk food lunches for all kids in America? No, they'd say these things are unhealthy and therefore we should not celebrate them. We should educate people. So if you're a cigarette smoker, there's that warning staring you on the face. When you go to eat, now you're told the calories and the content of different foods. So shouldn't the hospital be responsible in doing this? So Dr. Church, who was never once accused of any act of discrimination against a patient, Dr. Church, who from all accounts was a fine doctor there and respected faculty member, when he did not want to be included in the announcements of gay pride events in his emails, why should he be subject to that? And because he warned against the consequences, here are health risks associated with homosexual practice, he was fired. Fired. Yeah, by the hospital. So this past Wednesday, he was able to speak to the board of directors of Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. He was able to speak for 15 minutes, and then someone on the other side spoke against him. So this was probably a lawyer for the hospital. And then the final appeal was given to the board of directors, and that would be that they would have to demonstrate that the hospital panel upheld this expulsion. Excuse me, the final appeal is calling to recognize that they acted arbitrarily, capriciously, or with prejudice, or that the recommendation of the panel was not supported by the evidence. Now, there is a national physicians group that is in uproar about this, and it is the, let's see here, the AAPS, which is, AAPS is right, and there we go, it's in the headline. The Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, they have spoken very plainly against the hospital and said what they did is a sham. It's an absolute sham that what he did was tell the politically incorrect truth. Think of it, a doctor being fired for telling the truth.
The Line of of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, we need nothing less than moral and cultural revolution. We need nothing less than a radical turning around in our society. We need nothing less than for light to triumph in darkness and good to triumph in evil and truth to triumph in the midst of lies. And this is not going to happen through human effort alone. We need the help of the Holy Spirit. What do? We humble ourselves, friends. We look for areas where we've fallen short in our own lives. We humble ourselves before God. We repent of our sins. We ask God for His mercy. And then we turn to Him in fervent prayer, and we ask God to shake our nation. We ask God for awakening in the church. We ask God for conviction of the Spirit on the lost. We ask God for a clear word to go forth. And we do what we know how to do. Every step we take, be it in our private lives, be it in our families, be it in the public spheres that we have, one life at a time changing. Do what you can to make a difference. Someone asked me about a petition I was encouraging people to sign. They said, well, I've signed things before and nothing's happened. I said, with an attitude like that, nothing's ever going to happen. Not only so, but if you can't even go through the trouble of adding your name to an online petition, it takes you maybe 15 seconds to do. And the absolute worst consequence of that is you might end up getting some junk mail from that group. In other words, if it's something that is not in your address book and it comes in that they've got a follow-up statement or more information, that's the worst consequence, that when you're deleting 100 pieces of email, you've got 101 to delete if you don't want it. That's the worst consequence. To not do it, well, friends, that's why we go nowhere. This is Michael Brown, and my heart is burning today in a healthy way, not heartburn, but a holy burning heart. I encourage you to join with me in being a vessel of Jesus' revolution, 866-34-TRUTH. So, here's a news report, September 28th, Tucson, Arizona, thousands petition hospital to reinstate ousted doctor, State's Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. Now, the petition was signed by 4,100 people at that point. Now, the new petition signed by over 8,000. So, Dr. Paul Church, a respected urologist, served in the hospital for decades and on the faculty of Harvard University's medical school as a urologist, warned against the dangers of homosexual behavior. All right? He simply used the hospital's communication system to warn of undisputed health risks and to protest the hospital's promotion of unhealthy behavior and lifestyles. According to AAPS Executive Director Jane Orient, if he had conveyed concerns about smoking, there would have been no problem. But telling the politically incorrect truth about even larger risks can end a distinguished career. Now, please give me your best ear for a minute, all right? Give me your best ear just for 1 minute. People have said to me, Dr. Brown, why are you so obsessed with this issue? Why this one sin? Missing the point. Absolutely missing the point. First, there are many things that burden me, that concern me. When I'm teaching my classes at our ministry school, there are very few classes that I teach on that address these issues. As our missionaries are serving around the world and they're coming into town now for our annual missions conference, we'll be celebrating the spread of the gospel around the world. And this will not be a major focus of the conference or a focus at all. When I'm interacting with our team working on Jewish ministry and talking about more ways that we can reach Jewish people with the gospel, this is not on our radar. As I'm editing now the Job commentary, working with the publisher on editing the Job commentary, this is not the major issue that's on my mind. When I spoke passionately about Israel and the Palestinians earlier in this hour, this issue of homosexual activism was not on my mind. So this is hardly the only thing. You say, well, why have you addressed this sin so much? My issue is not with the sexual act itself. It is sinful in God's sight and contrary to his creation rules. But that's not where my issue is. Dr. Paul Church is addressing this as a urologist and as a medical doctor. But that's not where my issue is. My issue is with gay activism, which has come knocking at our door in every sphere of society. That's where my issue lies. Gay activism, redefining marriage, assault on religious freedoms, an assault on a doctor's right to do solid work as a doctor and to warn about health dangers. That's my issue. If I preach over the years, if you've heard me preach for decades about sexual sin, I'm warning fellow heterosexuals. That's my world. That's my perception. Those are the areas where I have to be careful as a heterosexual man. That's what I'm warning against. That's what I'm conscious of. That's my sphere. So when I'm talking about sexual sin, I'm generally talking about heterosexual sin and adultery and pornography and things that are seductive and destructive and the constant barrage of sinful sexual content through the media for many, many years now. That's what I'm talking about. And Paul, go through his lists. Go through them. Take a look. Galatians 5, 1 Corinthians 6, where he gives lists like that. Colossians 3, Ephesians 5? Look at his list. So 1 Corinthians 6, Galatians 5, Ephesians 5, Colossians 3, to give them in order. Look at his lists of sins that are works of the flesh or that exclude someone from the kingdom of God. He always starts with sexual immorality. It's just terribly pervasive in our world, and it's a weakness. God's blessed us with sexuality in this world, but we often corrupt it and do things in fleshly, destructive ways and outside of wedlock, etc. So when I'm talking about sexual sins, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm worrying about. That's what I'm looking at in my own life, to be careful and to guard my eyes and to guard my heart. It is gay activism that we are responding to. Here, if we just had this happen in the place that we're renting right now. It's fairly new, but with heavy rains we had, Nancy contacted me one day, wanted me to know that we got a leaky roof. It's leaked down into one of the rooms and it's damaging the floor and so on. Well, we contact the owner and they contact a roofer, and the roofer comes to check it out and work on it. Why are you so obsessed with water? We're not obsessed with water. There were heavy rains, and because of that, the water started to come in the house, so the roof has to be repaired. All we're doing is standing up in the midst of a social moral confrontation. I will rejoice. I will be thrilled when the day comes that this is not something that we have to address all the time. I will be thrilled when I write my last article on the subject because we don't need to address it anymore. But we have a situation like Dr. Paul Church. How do we respond to that, to this absolute injustice? So AAPS Executive Director Jane Orient, if he had conveyed concerns about smoking, there would have been no problem, but telling the politically incorrect truth about even larger risks can end a distinguishing career. In the future, the hospital's actions may be viewed in the same light as tobacco companies are now, Jane Orient added. But how many patients will have been harmed? Quote, the larger issue is how can patients trust their doctor to tell them the truth about anything if a hospital can destroy his livelihood if he departs from the approved script? Yeah, this is a national organization representing physicians in all specialties, founded in 1943 to preserve private medicine and the patient-physician relationship, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, speaking out against this outrage. Hey, if you want to get involved, if you want to do something, go to massresistance.org, M-A-S-S, massresistance.org. When you go there, you'll see this is the headline story. There's a petition you can click on and sign. Hey, if everybody listening joins in, suddenly those numbers grow. They're not at 8,000 anymore. And if you tell a friend, suddenly those numbers grow and the hospital realizes we are trying to do what is politically correct, but we are shooting ourselves in the foot in doing so. And I encourage each of you to be determined to do the right thing in the world in which you live. Be determined to do the right thing as parents. Be determined to do the right thing as students. Be determined to do the right thing as employees and as employers. Be determined to use the influence you have as a pastor, as a Sunday school teacher, as someone in the media, as someone in the sports world. Full of love, full of compassion, full of truth. Be determined to do the right thing, to be a vessel of light and truth and revolution.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, can I share a neat testimony with you? Would that be all right? It's a little bit off topic, but it's my show, and maybe you just hopped in the car now and listening, so there is no topic. 866-34-TRUTH. We get a lot of hate mail. We get death wishes, even death threats, and, you know, that happens, ugly stuff on a regular basis. But we get a ton of encouragement and appreciation. And one note here, Kay, I'm blessed by everything you do, Dr. Brown, and what a role model you are for the rest of us to be a blessing to others in our lives. The first YouTube video based on outlasting the gay revolution was outstanding. Thank you for that, encapsulating your ideas so well and in video form. Can't wait to hear the others. Dan said, Dr. Brown, thank you so much for what you do. You're one of the very few Christian leaders in the public eye that I can trust to speak the truth again. Thank you, and may the Lord continue to bless you. Those are very sweet and dear and encouraging. But I found one online that wasn't sent to me. It's from a pastor. He posted this last year, and it was Faith Presbyterian Church. So this is a Presbyterian pastor, and it was called Strange Fire, Authentic Fire, and How I Changed My Mind. I want to share this with you because it's edifying, and there's a great lesson. Reading both John MacArthur and Michael Brown's books has been a valuable learning experience for me. I hadn't planned to read Michael Brown's book because I was quite certain I knew what he would say and even more certain that I would disagree. However, after listening to a presentation by John MacArthur to some of his master's students and then a dialogue between Michael Brown and Phil Johnson, I decided it was important to consider more carefully what Brown had to say. From the beginning, this pastor writes, I've been sympathetic with John MacArthur. Not only did my sympathies lie with cessationism, the teaching that the miraculous gifts have ceased, I've long appreciated the ministry of a man who has been a faithful shepherd. More recently, I've been troubled and even surprised by some of the vitriol that has been spread around the internet in reaction to the recent Strange Fire conference. My instinct all along has been in favor of MacArthur and colleagues, but watching the Christian community speak out in anger against him and reading his book only strengthened my resolve, for what it's worth, to stand in his support. But I've changed my mind. I remain thankful for MacArthur and his ministry, and I'm convinced that he meant well, but Michael Brown's book has shed some valuable and needed light on the subject and led me to rethink some of my presuppositions and reevaluate the Strange Fire Conference. Here, though, I will not attempt to make a case for either cessationist or continuous, the teaching that the miraculous gifts have continued thinking. Rather, having read both books, I want to share some of the lessons learned from the experience. So first, he said, it's important to hear the other side. And it would have been better, rather than the Strange Fire Conference, to have, or in the midst of it, in the conference, to have people like John Piper, D.A. Carson, and myself share our perspective and interact so that people could hear more of both sides. He said, second, no matter our differences, there's always need for grace. On this score, Michael Brown is to be commended. Though I do not agree with him on every point, he takes exception to the fact that I didn't renounce Benny Hinn in my book. I quoted him favorably. I was quoting him in terms of things he had renounced, if I remember. But he says this, I found this book the more gracious of the two. I will admit here that Brown's attitude and tone made me willing to hear his arguments, whereas listening to some of the proponents of cessationism, I've only wanted to turn them off. So hearing me write with respect and with a heart for unity, he said, whatever we may think of his theology, we would do well to learn from his gracious tone. Third, it is possible to be wrong, even though very right. Again, I don't want to speak for either side in this debate, but even if MacArthur and colleagues are perfectly sound in their teaching on the supernatural gifts, they're very wrong in the way that they have dealt with the charismatic community. Errors do abound in that community, but as Brown points out, no matter what the tradition, we are all ultimately responsible only for those over whom we have authority. Charismatics are no more responsible for their sins, the sins and errors of all other charismatics, than Presbyterians are responsible for the sins and errors of all other Presbyterians. Trange Fire has made gross generalizations, which are sometimes so far off the mark they border on dishonesty. Fourth, it has become increasingly clear to me that terms need to be redefined. Fifth, and these are all expanded in this article, there is various streams of tradition on both sides, so you can't lump them all in one category. Sixth, Brown is right to observe how prone we are in the Christian community to be divisive. So thankfully, he recognized my ongoing call for unity. And then he says this, finally, we have a great deal to learn from our charismatic brothers, whether or not we decide to rethink cessationism. Having spent time on the mission field in non-denominational charismatic churches, Pentecostal churches, Baptist churches, and Reformed churches, I know that orthodoxy and spiritual barrenness often go hand in hand. I love Reformed theology, but it is not by accident that we have come to be known as the Frozen Chosen. How many of us have participated in all-night prayer meetings? How many of us have been part of worship services where time teams seem to stand still and the cry of every heart was for more of God? We love the theology of Jonathan Edwards, John Owen, and Samuel Rutherford, but I can't help wondering how many of us in our Reformed churches have encountered God like these men did. So he says this, I have to confess that reading Michael Brown's book, I was struck by how complacent I have become. This is a Presbyterian pastor. He writes, I've met more than enough students who used to be passionate in their walks with the Lord, but got so heady and theological that they became a mere shadow of their former selves. And he says this, he said, last night, I put the book down and stayed up into the night praying and weeping. I don't agree with everything Brown said, and in some ways we were very far apart theologically, but I heard his passion and his plea, and the Holy Spirit brought it home to my heart. I pray that the fire that has begun by God's grace to burn again in my heart would burn all the brighter in the days and months to come, but I pray too for the greatest cessationist family that we would be more careful, less divisive, and more willing to learn from our brothers in Christ. And he quotes Leonard Ravenhill at the end, you can have all of your doctrines right, yet still not have the presence of God. I wrote to him back in August saying, I just discovered your article and was moved to read how the Lord stirred your heart afresh. May his grace and kindness flood your life. And he wrote back, thank you, Michael. May the Lord continue to strengthen you in his work. So, boy, I was blessed. I was really blessed to read that. So, friends, if you already have a copy of Authentic Fire, the book that was just talked about, we've got a special offer with it this week. Great time to give it to a friend or use it as a holiday present. Not too early to do that. When you order it this week, we'll give you free with it the DVD of my two-hour debate with Professor Bart Ehrman, Does the Bible Provide an Adequate Answer to the Problem of Suffering? Not only is this a great edifying tool that will build you up and encourage you and inspire you in your faith, it's great to show to college-age kids, even serious high schoolers, and it's great to show to non-believers. If you have an atheist friend or agnostic friend, maybe someone who used to be a follower of Jesus and just got really discouraged, maybe suffered a tragedy and they've lost hope and faith, the DVD is great to show them. So this week, get the Authentic Fire book and we'll give you a free copy of the DVD debate with Professor Bart Ehrman. Give us a call to order 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Or go to the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. My bottom line today, my heart burns to see justice in Israel, in America, in the world, which means all the more we pray, oh God, your kingdom come, your will be done. Let's set the record straight. Jesus was not a Palestinian. Oh, and there's some big news about a big pushback against the Supreme Court decision from June.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Many of you were in church services yesterday morning. Some of you were in synagogue services or Messianic Jewish services on Saturday morning. Did any of the pastors, Messianic leaders, rabbis get up holding a gun, holding a knife, and encourage you to kill your enemies? I would say the answer is no, that is not the case, that did not happen, unless you're in some crazy fanatical group and you were spying on it. Otherwise, you run from a place like that. But of course not. Of course not. Because that's not what's going to happen in a church service or in a synagogue. That's not what's going to happen. But in some mosques, that very thing does happen. This is Michael Brown. Welcome to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I invite Muslims around the world to join with me in denouncing these things. When there are terrorist attacks on Israel, and we post it on our Facebook page, immediately people begin to join in attacking the Jews, attacking Israel. It's all their fault. It's remarkable. It's absolutely remarkable. It's distressing. It's ugly. I just posted this moments ago. The vast majority of Muslims and Palestinians are not terrorists. Unfortunately, many Muslims who post here attack Israel and or the Jewish people in the harshest of terms, believing every stereotype lie about them, while Islamic leadership around the world stirs up hatred against Israel and or the Jewish people. Spend a few minutes on websites like memorytv.org or palwatch.org and see for yourself. I still believe the saying is true. If the Palestinians would put down their weapons, there'd be no more war. If the Israelis would put down their weapons, there'd be no more Israel. I urge every Muslim reading this to unconditionally denounce the recent terrorist attacks against Israeli men, women, and children without demonizing Israel at the same time. Demonstrate here that your religion is a religion of peace. Will you do it? And let's see what happens. We have enough Muslims that on our page. We hear from them. Some of them, if like anyone else, if they post something vile and unacceptable, we remove it and we block them. They've often been warned, but I don't think that's your average everyday Muslim. Let's see if I'm right or if I'm wrong. 866-34-TRUTH. If you're a Muslim listening, I invite you to call in and say, I categorically renounce the violence against Israeli men, women, and children. Can you say that? Listen, if an Israeli settler or an Israeli army officer in cold blood, without any justification, killed Palestinian civilian, I would categorically renounce it. When it has happened, I have categorically renounced it, as others would, as Israel does. We categorically renounce this. We don't then say, at the same time, there was all kinds of provocation. It's wrong. Murder is always wrong, without exception. Murder is murder. Casualties in war. If the enemy is coming to attack you, if radical Muslims came to attack you and you were able to successfully defend your home or your city, that would be self-defense. That would not be murder. But cold-blooded murder is always wrong. And if an Israeli civilian is guilty of it, listen, I'm grieved over the gay pride events in Jerusalem, but for a fanatical right-wing religious Jew to stab someone, to try to kill someone at a gay pride event is absolutely outrageous. It is murderous. It is wrong. It is ugly. It is unjustifiable. I categorically, without reservation or qualification, denounce it. Can you do the same when it comes to violence against Israeli men, women, and children? We'll be right back. Jeremiah Wright. Wait till you hear what he had to say.
Fire we please, stand in the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Down, down, USA! Down, down, USA! Down, down!
That was a cry from the so-called Million Man March, Justice or Else, this past Saturday at the National Mall in D.C., led by Louis Farrakhan. And there speaking at the event was Reverend Jeremiah Wright, President Obama's pastor for many years. Listen to what Jeremiah Wright had to say. He is joining together the suffering, the conditions of Native Americans, Palestinians, and blacks in America, joining the blacks of Ferguson with the Palestinians in Israel today. And Jeremiah Wright had some outlandish things to say. Take a listen.
We are grateful to God to be able to be here and to speak a word on behalf of Palestinian justice. Those who put this program together just had the Aboriginal people, the original people of this country, on this platform. And that was so powerful for this reason. They came here to remind us of the fact that this was their country before the Europeans decided that their God had given them this country. The same issue is being fought today and has been fought since 1948, and historians were carried back to the 19th century. Biblical historians were carried back to the Book of Judges, where the original people, the Palestinians, and please remember, Jesus was a Palestinian.
Okay, first thing, the Palestinians today are descended from various Arab countries in the surrounding area, and do not go back to the Canaanites of the Book of Judges. That's the first thing. The second thing, if you are a minister of the gospel, as Jeremiah Wright professes to be, then you recognize that the Canaanites were driven out of the land of Israel because of their wickedness. You understand that this was judgment on the Canaanites and others living in the land, like Hittites and others, because of their wickedness, because of their sin. God waited 400 years, according to Genesis, the 15th chapter, 400 years until he judged them, waiting for the iniquity to get to its full level. And then he gave the land as the creator. He gave it as his inheritance to the people of Israel, not to Europeans, but to the people of Israel, and said, it's yours forever. And he made that promise well before he gave the law to Moses that said, if you obey, you stay in the land. If you disobey, you're exiled. And that's why it's up to him to bring them back when he wants to bring them back. The Palestinians are not ethnically related to the Canaanites of old. And if they were, all the more, according to the word, does the land not belong to them. As for Jesus being a Palestinian, you've got to be kidding me. First thing on that score, the name Palestine did not exist in that day. You had Judea, Samaria. You had provinces that were under Rome. You had the ancient land of Israel, the ancient kingdom of Israel and kingdom of Judah, with the capital of Judah in Jerusalem. And you had the Judeans living there, the Jewish people living there. There was no such thing as Palestine. That was in the second century. This is after the second Jewish revolt under Bar Kokhba in the second century, where a Roman emperor, to further mock the Jewish people and to distance them from any connection to the land whatsoever, renamed it as Palestine. The Philistines were already basically extinct. They had pretty much been wiped out or assimilated into other cultures. But because this was Israel's ancient enemy, it was given the name Palestine. This was to mock Israel and to mock the Jewish people and to further disconnect them from the land. So there was no such thing as Palestine there. Therefore, Jesus was not a Palestinian. You might as well say that the Native Americans, Jeremiah Wright referred to as the Aboriginal people here, the indigenous people, that they were citizens of the United States of America in the 1500s. So the United States of America didn't exist then. More importantly, Palestinians are overwhelmingly Muslims. There's a small percentage that are Christians. Jesus is a Jew. Jesus was known as Yeshua. That was his name. His mother's name was Miriam. He was called Rabbi Yeshua. His older cousin was called Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan Hamatbil, St. John the Baptist the Immerser. We'll get that one right, huh? So hear me. Calling Jesus a Palestinian is completely anachronistic historically. Again, it's like saying that the Native Americans were citizens of the United States of America in the 1500s. And also to call Jesus a Palestinian is to take away from his Jewish roots and his Jewish identity as the rabbi, teacher, the Messiah of Israel, and hence the Savior of the world. Oh, there's more. Listen to what he says next.
The youth in Ferguson and the youth in Palestine have united together to remind us that the dots need to be connected. Boycott, divestment, and sanction is how we fought nonviolently to bring an end to apartheid in South Africa. Apartheid is going on in Palestine as we sit here. There's an apartheid wall being built twice the size of the Berlin Wall in height, keeping Palestinians off of illegally occupied territories where the Europeans have claimed that land as their own.
All right, hang on. The Jewish people living in the land of Israel descend ultimately from Israel. Yeah, there's some intermarriage in Europe and other countries and things like that, but they are not Europeans. They are Jews whose roots go back to the Middle East, whose roots go back to the Promised Land, who for years, for decades, for centuries were saying with their prayers next year in Jerusalem, longing to be back there. Jerusalem has only been the capital city of Israel. It's not been the capital city of other kingdoms, nations. There was no such thing as a Palestinian state or statehood. There was a Jewish presence through the centuries in the land, and there's plenty of room for the Jewish people and the Arabs living together there, especially when the settlements began to grow, a population surge towards the late 1800s as more and more Jews came. Plenty of room for everybody to live together. Not only so, Israel is not an apartheid state. When the UN declared Israel a nation and offered the partition plan in 1947, the partition plan was rejected by the Arab leadership. 1948, the Israelis now recognized their state for the first time. The world recognized it. What happened? Immediately, the surrounding Arab nations, 800,000 Jews had to flee from the surrounding Arab Muslim nations and were mainly assimilated back into Israel. About 600,000 or 700,000 Palestinians fled because of the war and also with the encouragement of the surrounding Muslim Arab nations. They were not assimilated. What happened to the 200,000 Arabs who stayed in the land of Israel? They are now 1.5 million strong. They make up 10% of the parliament. They even have a representative on the Supreme Court who is an Arab. It is not an apartheid state. What about the wall? It's 97% fence, and it's put up to keep murderers out. And the reason for the wall in certain places is to keep snipers out. Those are the realities. But what do those realities have to do with what Dr. Wright's saying? Nothing whatsoever. And how are you going to compare the youths in Ferguson, which Europeans came and took black land in America? I mean, how do you compare that? Yeah, there's the horrible history of America's treatment of African Americans. We understand that. We renounce that and work in every way we can to continue to make things right and push things forward as a society together. But what's the connection? There is none. It's just inciting hatred, violence, and anger and trying to connect dots that do not exist. One more clip.
Dr. Martin Luther King said in 1967 at the Riverside Church, "We are fighting a three-headed demon, and manifestations of that demon have been seen today and are seen not only on this stage but on the world stage with the Native Americans from this country, the Native Americans in Central America, the Native Americans called Mexican in Guatemala, Cuba, Puerto Rico, Haiti, the natives who see foreigners coming in and taking their land." He said we're fighting a three-headed, Dr. King did, a three-headed demon: racism, militarism, and capitalism. Those three-headed demons are what are causing the Palestinians to have a fight just like the fight we are having here, trying to get people to understand that Black lives matter. Palestinians are saying Palestinian lives matters.
All lives matter, for sure. and we should be jealous for justice for the Palestinians and justice for American blacks and justice for Americans, Native Americans, and every group, and justice for Israelis and Jews, every group. But listen to Dr. King. The whole world must see that Israel must exist and has the right to exist and is one of the great outposts of democracy in the world. Peace for Israel, he said, means security, and we must stand with all our might to protect its rights to exist, its territorial integrity. I see Israel as one of the great outposts of democracy in the world and a marvelous example of what can be done, how desert land can be transformed into an oasis of brotherhood and democracy. Peace for Israel means security, and that security must be a reality.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
إذا كانوا يعتقدون أن الناس في القدس تقف للدفاع عن نفسها فهذا حقنا. نحن يجب أن ندافع عن مقدساتنا جميعا الإسلامية والمسيحية
نردك يا أرض جدودي نردك يا أرض جدودي.
Isn't it sweet hearing children singing? Isn't it? Unfortunately, these were children who were singing an anti-Israel war song on Palestinian Authority TV. And then that was Mahmoud Abbas speaking in a way that does not stop the incitement, but fans it into further flame in so many ways. This is the song. Here's a prisoner, the niece singing. I want to recite a song for you. What am I doing here with my enemy? While my enemy is on my ancestors' land, I want to defend. I want to fight. I want to carry a machine gun and rifle. That's the niece of a prisoner in prison for terrorism. And tomorrow when the war starts, these nieces 1 and 2, I won't care about you, my enemy, about the West. Tomorrow when the war starts, I won't care about you. We shall strike Israel. We shall strike Israel and return to the land of my ancestors. Kids grow up with this, friends. It's a terrible, terrible stronghold. And then you go to the mosque, all right? You go to the mosque, not every mosque. I can't say many mosques. I don't know how many, but some. Wouldn't it be troubling if there were some churches in America calling for violence against the government and the pastor's holding up a gun and calling for violence? Would not that get our attention here in America if there were a few doing that? That's a few too many. Well, this is a sermon on Friday, October 9th, and it's delivered at the Al-Abrar Mosque in Rafah, the Gaza Strip. Sheikh Mohammed Salah Abu Rajab brandished a knife, calling upon his brothers in the West Bank. Let's listen to him first. This is preaching. You can see a picture of him with the knife. Let's listen to it, and then I'll give you the translation.
عرفنا اليوم لماذا يبنون الجدران ليس لمنع الصواريخ وإنما لمنع الذبح عن رقابهم. يا أخي في الضفة اطعن.
You can hear the passion in the voice, the conviction in the voice. There have been in 72 hours 11 terror attacks in Israel. And as Israel's UN ambassador Ron Prosser pointed out, no UN condemnations. 11 terror attacks, no UN condemnations. Some of the sermon says this: stab, O young men of the West Bank, attack in threes and fours, cut them into body parts. Brothers, he said, we must constantly remind the world and everyone who has forgotten. The world must hear via these cameras and via the internet. This is Gaza. This is the place of trenches and guns. This is the West Bank. This is the place of bombs and daggers. This is Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the code word. This is Jerusalem. Much can be told about Jerusalem. This is where the soldiers of the Prophet Muhammad are. This is the grace of Allah. The soldiers of the Prophet Muhammad are here. Brothers, this is why we recall today what Allah did to the Jews. We recall what he did to them in Khaybar. You're talking about massacring of Jewish people. He said, today we realize why the Jews build walls. They do not do this to stop missiles, but to prevent the slitting of their throats. And then he brandishes a dagger and he makes stabbing motions. My brothers in the West Bank stab. My brothers in the West Bank stab the myths of the Talmud in their minds. My brothers in the West Bank stab the myths about the temple in their hearts. Today we have declared a curfew in Israel. Listen to what the Jews are saying to one another. Stay at home or go outside to your death. They have no alternative. O men of the West Bank, the first phase of the operation requires stabbing in order to bring about the curfew. So, look, we get crazy people sending crazy things to us, wishing death or even threatening it. But 99.9% of the time, even if someone really feels that way, it's just words. It's just words. This is not just words in Israel, friends. This is not just words in Israel. This is a matter of people calling for violence, calling for stabbing, and then people go out thinking they're doing God's work and stab Israeli men, women, and children. Ron Prosser said this, in 72 hours alone, 11 terror attacks have taken place in cities across Israel. Israelis are being attacked and murdered in the streets, in their vehicles, even in their homes, and the UN stands by in silence. Prosser laid the blame for the recent terror murders at the doorstep of the Palestinian Authority and its chairman, Mahmoud Abbas. The escalation in terror attacks and killings is a result of the ongoing incitement to violence by the Palestinian leadership. Palestinian officials continue to use inflammatory rhetoric and dangerous incitement, intensifying this wave of terror attacks against Israeli citizens, and it must stop. And he urged the UN Secretary General and the Security Council to denounce these attacks in an unequivocal manner and to speak out against the campaign of incitement and terror currently being waged against the people of Israel. Let me say this again. I will post something, or my team will post something on our Facebook page, and it will be a picture of radical Islamic violence against Israelis, or it will be an article about the terrorist attacks. And invariably, Israel haters, Jew haters, others will join in, Muslims, some radical Muslims, and what do? They renounce Israel. They attack the Jewish people. And I'm just looking here so far on our Facebook post, which I put up a little while ago, calling for Muslims to unconditionally renounce the terrorist attacks against Israeli men, women, and children without demonizing Israel at the same time. So far, let's see. I'm not seeing a renouncement yet. Here, no. Come on. Go to social media. Do it. Make a statement. If Islam is a religion of peace, and I'm not provoking you, I'm not mocking you. I'm saying, please speak out accordingly. Others have. Why won't you? All right, friends, this week we are really pleased to make available my book, Authentic Fire, which I wrote as a response to John MacArthur's Strange Fire, but I wrote it to be a lasting work of its own. The one place to go to find out what the Bible really says about the gifts and power of the Spirit, to find out what it really means to encounter God, to talk about errors that have occurred in different parts of the church, including the charismatic church, and to really provoke your own heart to know God and to see him work through you in full. And the book is written with grace and with a call for unity in the church throughout among true believers. When you order the book this week, we're also giving you free with it my two-hour debate on DVD with Professor Bart Ehrman. Does the Bible provide an adequate answer to the problem of suffering? So it's a great value and great resources. Great holiday gifts as well. So to order, go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. You can order there. There's more information, a video you can watch as well.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I have said that 2015 is the year of pushback. Not time to back up, time to wake up. Not time to capitulate, time to stand strong, stand firm for righteousness, for morality. And something major happened the end of last week. My latest article addresses it. I encourage you to check it out. It is entitled Legal Scholars Rise Up Against the Supreme Court's Judicial Despotism. Legal Scholars Rise Up Against the Supreme Court's Judicial Despotism. So we are changing topics from Israel right now, and we are focusing on things here in America. 866-34-TRUTH if you'd like to weigh in. Or differ with me. Isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing how, you know what, I think I got to do another of these critics call-in days when the only ones that can call are people who differ with me. Maybe I can even schedule one in the next few days. I have to look, see who we've got, what guests we've got coming on, what issues we're planning on addressing. But maybe I can do that because, boy, most of the time, we'll get blasted by the critics. We know you're out there because we get blasted by you all the time. We know you're listening. We know you're reading. And yet when we invite you to call in and have a civil chat, is it easier to wish premature death on someone on Facebook than to call a broadcast and chat? Is it easier to use all kinds of profanity and ugly terms than to call into a broadcast and chat? Is it eager to demonize and vilify fellow human beings who care about you, to vilify, demonize them in the ugliest terms imaginable? I can't imagine wishing this on stuff that gets wished on me on any person. Is it easier to do that than to call in and say, hey, let me tell you why I differ, or let me tell you why I think your position is wrong? It really says something about our society today, doesn't it? Nancy wanted me to watch a special. I think I may have mentioned this to you, but it was about teenagers, and it was about 13-year-olds and their use of cell phones, and then these kids agreed to having all their communication monitored over a period of months, and then the parents were brought into the loop as well, and what these kids were saying was unreal. I mean, if they were frustrated, you know, they're ready to start throwing bodies off bridges and burning bodies and kill this one and kill that one. Someone said, well, it's just a persona I take on Facebook. These are 13-year-olds. And then, you know, some of the kids, they knew someone. Yeah, the girl sent a naked picture of herself to her boyfriend. But then the boyfriend broke up and he sent it out to others. And now she's ashamed. And it's like, yikes, yikes, yikes. But what struck me was the people who at 13 are communicating in these ways with each other. It's just the way that communication is done. If you're not a godly kid or a kid with good morals, it's just the way it's done. The profanity, the vulgarity, the ugliness, the hate, even the violent threats and things like that. It's just what they're doing. So now you're 18, you're 20, you're 30, you're doing the same stuff. You're doing the same stuff. When we come back, I want to talk to you about a significant pushback. Scholars from professors from schools like Princeton and Oxford, Notre Dame, and many other prestigious universities, legal scholars, professors, philosophers, informed citizens have stood together to push back, and they're calling on every presidential candidate to stand with them on these issues. What exactly is going on? We'll cover that when we come back on the Line of Fire. 866-34-TRUTH. Yeah. Hey, Betsy, the critics have not lit up the phone line today. The ones who differ, the hostile ones, or even Muslims just calling in to renounce terror against Israel. That should easily be done, right? We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, explain this to me. Explain this to me. I'll post something like, God intends marriage to be the union of a man and woman. And I get flooded with death wishes, vulgarity, and profanity. Why? Why is that? It's not like I was yelling and screaming about other people. It's not like I was attacking them, simply saying this is what marriage is, and believing that God, our creator, designed things a certain way. This is what he intended. So look, when I got married in a church with a pastor, Nancy and I, both Jewish believers in Jesus, a rabbi that had befriended me after I became a believer, he wouldn't come. He says, it's not a Jewish wedding. He said, if it was a Jewish wedding, I'd come, even though we were followers of Jesus. He said, but it's not a Jewish wedding, so I can't come. Oh, I understand that. According to your beliefs, it's not valid. I understand that. I didn't hate him for it. I respected him for it. We would have loved to have him, but fully respected that, fully understood that. When, if a Muslim told me that I had certain beliefs and he felt my beliefs were wrong and that the Bible was corrupted and the Quran was the true revelation, well, he's wrong. He thinks I'm wrong. But I'm not going to wish for his death or respond with profanity or vulgarity or whatever. Or if two gay people say, look, we love each other and our relationship should be recognized as marriage, and we think you're bigoted for not recognizing that, I'm not going to respond with death wishes, profanity, vulgarity. So why is it when I make a very moderate, fair statement, and one that reflects world opinion throughout history, for the most part, the religious world, and certainly the history of America and the gospel, the Bible, until just recently, some shifts in America, why is it greeted with such ferocity and hatred? Ah, that says something, doesn't it? 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, so 2015, the year of pushback. This is very exciting. The Campaign for American Principles, people like Professor Robert George, that was the best known name to me on the list, Princeton University. Call to Action Scholar Statement. He says, they say, we have great respect for judges. We have even greater respect for law. When judges behave lawlessly, it is the law that must be honored, not lawless judges. The Supreme Court is supreme in the federal judicial system, but the justices are not supreme over the other branches of government, and they are certainly not supreme over the Constitution. In Obergefell versus Hodges, five justices without the slightest warrant in the text, logic, structure, or historical understanding of the Constitution presumed to declare unconstitutional the marriage laws of states that maintain the historic and sound understanding of marriage as the conjugal union of husband and wife. Obergefell is not the law of the land. It has no more claim to that status than Dred Scott versus Sanford had when President Abraham Lincoln condemned that pro-slavery decision as an offense against the very Constitution that the Supreme Court justices responsible for that atrocious ruling purported to be upholding. Lincoln warned that for the people and their elected leaders to treat unconstitutional decisions of the Supreme Court as creating a binding rule on anyone other than the parties to the particular case would be, quote, for the people to have ceased to be their own rulers, having to that extent practically resigned their government into the hands of that eminent tribunal. Because we stand with President Lincoln against judicial despotism, we also stand with these distinguished legal scholars who are calling on office holders to reject Obergefell as an unconstitutional effort to usurp the authority vested by the Constitution and the people and their representatives. At the same time, we stand with the four dissenting justices, Supreme Court justices in Obergefell, who rightly noted that the judicially imposed redefinition of marriage is a judicial power grab that will, as Justice Alito wrote in his dissent, vilify Americans who are unwilling to assent to the new orthodoxy. So, they are calling on all presidential candidates, everyone who aspires to be president, to pledge, one, to treat Obergefell not as the law of the land, but rather, to once again quote Justice Alito, as an abuse of judicial power. Two, refuse to recognize Obergefell as creating a binding rule controlling other cases or their own conduct as president. 3, appoint justices and judges who respect the constitutional limits of their power. And 4, support the First Amendment Defense Act to protect the conscience and free speech of those who hold fast to the conjugal understanding of marriage as the union of husband and wife. And he says, like Lincoln, they say, like Lincoln, we will not accept judicial edicts that undermine the sovereignty of the people, the rule of the law, and the supremacy of the Constitution. We will resist them by every peaceful and honorable means. We will not be bullied into acquiescence or silence. We will fight for the Constitution and our beloved nation. Friends, what's the first principle in outlasting the gay revolution? And if you have the book already, or you remember when I've talked about it, what's the first principle? Never compromise your convictions. It's principle number one. That's where we start. Compromise spells defeat. Retreat spells defeat. We never compromise our convictions. And then 2, we take the highest moral ground. We don't repay evil with evil. We don't repay hatred with hatred. We don't repay bigotry with bigotry. We don't repay violence with violence. We overcome evil with good. We overcome hatred with love. We overcome lies with truth. We overcome the power of the flesh by the power of the Spirit. Number 3, sexual purity trumps sexual anarchy, meaning that we recognize that living in ways that are honoring to God and marriage and family and sexuality will ultimately trump the sexual anarchy of our culture. Then principle number 4, refuse to redefine marriage. Now these scholars, these professors, these lawyers are sounding an alarm and sending word across America that it is time to take a stand against judicial tyranny. So this was issued by the American Principles Project, so AmericanPrinciplesProject.org, on October 8th. Statement calling for constitutional resistance to Obergefell versus Hodges. We are scholars and informed citizens deeply concerned by the edict of the Supreme Court of the United States in Obergefell versus Hodges, wherein the court decreed by the narrowest of margins that every state in the country must redefine marriage to include same-sex relationships. The court's majority opinion eschewed reliance on the text, logic, structure, or original understanding of the Constitution, as well as the court's own interpretive doctrines and precedents, and supplied no compelling reasoning to show why it is unjustified for the laws of the states to sustain marriage as it has been understood for millennia as the union of husband and wife. They quote Justice Scalia, who refers to it as a naked judicial claim to legislative power, a claim fundamentally at odds with our system of government. They quote Justice Thomas, who says the opinion, quote, exalts judges at the expense of the people from whom they derive their authority, as it perverts the meaning of liberty into an entitlement to government action. They quote Justice Alito, who calls attention to the well-established doctrine that the liberty guaranteed by the Due Process Clause protects only those rights that are deeply rooted in this nation's history and tradition. And that is beyond dispute that the right to, it is beyond dispute that the right to same-sex marriage is not among those rights. He speaks of the court's abuse of its authority. They quote Chief Justice Roberts, who said, the Constitution leaves no doubt that the majority's pretentious opinion is incorrect. It even attempts to sully those on the other side of the debate in an entirely gratuitous manner. And they say if Obergefell is accepted as binding law, the consequences will be grave. And they speak of what will happen. Society will be harmed by being denied the right to hold out as normative and particularly desirable the only type of human relationship that every society must cultivate for its perpetuation. So society is going to be harmed because we can't hold out as normative the one relationship that we need to have to perpetuate the human race. 2, individuals and organizations holding to the historic and natural understanding of marriage as conjugal union will be vilified, legally targeted, and denied constitutional rights. 3, the new jurisprudence of dignity is unlimited in principle and will encourage additional claims to redefine marriage. 4, the right of all Americans to engage in democratic deliberation and ultimately self-government will be decisively undermined. And they have warnings from James Madison and Abraham Lincoln to this effect. Lincoln said in 1857, judicial decisions are of greater or less authority as precedents according to circumstances. That this should be so accords both with common sense and the customary understanding of the legal profession. If a decision had been made by the unanimous concurrence of the judges and without any apparent partisan bias and in accordance with legal public expectation and with the steady practice of the departments throughout our history and had been in no part based on assumed historical facts which are not really true, or if one against some of these it had been before the court more than once and had there been affirmed and reaffirmed through a course of years, it then might be, perhaps would be, factious, nay, even revolutionary, to not acquiesce in it as a precedent. However, if it's wanting in all these claims, it is not factious to resist it. In other words, when you have something that's a slim majority opinion based on no historical precedent and a misreading of the Constitution, it's not factious, it's not divisive to resist it. I'll tell you what they're calling for and who some of these professors are when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, just during the break, I'm hearing one feed. If you're listening online, you're hearing the same feed I am. And there was just a quote from Dr. R.C. Sproul. And if you're listening on your local radio broadcast, then you're hearing whatever your local station's playing. So it's different across the country, different city by city. But R.C. Sproul was saying he can't figure out any reason why God would choose to save him, obviously except for God's sovereignty. And how about the fact that he deeply loves us? How about the fact that in the midst of our sin and rebellion, he sees something precious? And he sees human beings still in the image of God, yet fallen. And he really cares for us. And he really delights in showing mercy and really, really wants our company as redeemed people. How about that? All right, so here are some of the professors, some of the signatories. Bradley C.S. Watson, Philip N. McKenna Chair in American Western Political Thought and Professor of Politics, St. Vincent College. John C. Eastman, Henry Salvatore Professor of Law and Community Services, Dale E. Fowler School of Law at Chapman University. George W. Dent Jr., Professor of Law at Case Western Reserve University School of Law. These are full professors. Robert P. George, McCormick Professor of Jurisprudence, Princeton University, founder of American Principles Project. Matthew J. Frank, Director, William E. and Carol G. Simon Center for Religion and the Constitution, Witherspoon Institute. Daniel J. Mahoney, Augustine Chair in Distinguished Scholarship, Assumption College. And on it goes. Texas Tech University, Hillsdale College, Washington and Lee University, Oglethorpe University, University of Dallas, Michigan State University, Azusa Pacific, Brigham Young, Boston College Law School, DeSales University, Louisiana State University Law Center, Claremont McKenna College, Kansas State University, University of Notre Dame, University of Dallas. I'm skipping over different ones. Catholic University of America, University of Toronto, Faulkner University, Villanova University, Claremont Graduate University, American University of Iraq, Patrick Henry College. Let's see, did I say University of Dallas? How about University of Cambridge? How about Oxford University? University of Notre Dame? I mean, a whole lot of professors and scholars, and they're all saying this decision is outrageous. So what are they calling for? They're saying this. Therefore, we stand with James Madison and Abraham Lincoln in recognizing that the Constitution is not whatever a majority of Supreme Court justices say it is. We remind all office holders in the United States that they are pledged to uphold the Constitution of the United States, not the will of five members of the Supreme Court. We call on all federal and state office holders. So this is a call to action. Everyone, please hear me. And the best thing to do is to go to my website, askdrbrown.org, read my latest article, and then click to sign the petition. All right? Click to sign the petition. If you've linked to my article already, haven't read it yet, as soon as you read it, click to sign the petition. And these folks are not the type that you're going to get 10 emails a day asking for money. Okay? This is a privilege to join together and sign this petition. They are calling on all federal and state office holders to refuse to accept Obergefell as binding precedent for all but the specific plaintiffs in that case. So the court ruled the people involved, the couple, that's the end of it, do not accept it as a binding precedent. Next, to recognize the authority of states to define marriage and the right of federal and state office holders to act in accordance with those definitions. To pledge full and mutual legal and political assistance to anyone who refuses to follow Obergefell for constitutionally protected reasons. And lastly, to open forthwith a broad and honest conversation on the means by which Americans may constitutionally resist and overturn the judicial usurpations evident in Obergefell. We emphasize that the course of action we are here advocating is neither extreme nor disrespectful of the rule of law. Lincoln regarded the claim of supremacy for the Supreme Court in matters of constitutional interpretation as incompatible with the Republican principles of the Constitution. Our position is summed up in Lincoln's first inaugural address. Let me quote Lincoln. "I do not forget the position assumed by some that constitutional questions are to be decided by the Supreme Court, nor do I deny that such decisions must be binding in any case upon the parties to a suit as to the object of that suit, where they are also entitled to very high respect and consideration in all parallel cases by other departments of the government. And while it is obviously possible that such decision may be erroneous in any given case, still the evil effect following it being limited to that particular case with the chance that it may be overruled and never become a precedent for other cases can better be borne than could the evils of a different practice." So he is putting up very, very clear lines about the authority of the Supreme Court. The proper understanding and definition of marriage, they say, is self-evidently a vital question affecting the whole people. To treat as settled and the law of the land the decision of five Supreme Court justices who, by their own admission, can find no warrant for their ruling in the text, logic, structure, or original understanding of the Constitution would indeed be to resign our government into the hands of that eminent tribunal. That is something that no citizen or statesman who wishes to sustain the great experiment in ordered liberty bequeathed to us by our founding fathers should be willing to do. Add your name to the petition. Help get this message out. Let us make a difference. Why was I going to give the phone number out? I'm not taking a single call right now. I want to play one more clip for you. One more clip. When I debated Professor Bart Ehrman, famous New Testament scholar and more famous agnostic, on the Bible and the problem of suffering, does the Bible provide an adequate answer to the problem of suffering? We talked to some atheists afterwards. It's a few years back at Ohio State. I'm going to tell you, you can get this DVD for free in a moment. But listen to what this atheist had to say. Joey, grab clip number two. I think you will find this fascinating.
My main concern with tonight was Ehrman's tone. It's hard to describe, but he sounded like he was just very disturbed.
And Dr. Brown, as far as his presentation, how would you describe?
I felt like it was masterful. You know, I disagree. I think that it was, you know, since I disagree with him on the substance of his position, I do have to say that I think it's ultimately kind of counterproductive for the aim of arriving at truth that his rhetoric is so good and that his presentation is so good. It's very polished. It's very warm. He sounded like someone who cares about you. Ehrman sounded like someone who wants to yell at you. And I don't know. I'm disappointed and kind of shocked by it.
Ah, maybe the Lord's touched that atheist since then. That was his perspective on the debate. When you order my book, Authentic Fire, which is a standalone book. It was a response to John MacArthur's Strange Fire, but a book meant to say, what does the Bible really say about the gifts of the Spirit? How can you experience everything God has while staying grounded on the Word and the Word alone? And how can we honor those who differ with us and stay in unity in the body? And how can we encounter God more deeply? Eye-opening, life-changing book will give you the DVD free on the debate with Bart Ehrman when you order the book. Go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, to find out more. My bottom line today, truth is going to triumph. Hang in there, friends. The light will overcome darkness.